There is only one scripture, only two verses in the Bible that mention the night to be much observed.
That's Exodus 12:40.
I'll read those at the start. The sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. It came to pass at the end of 430 years, on the very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. You will not find other churches that observe this day. I did a lot of digging and searching on the internet to see what I might find for other churches doing it. The only churches that I can find that are associated with this day or that observe this day in any way are churches that are somehow connected to the past of Radio Church of God and Worldwide Church of God under the leadership of Herbert Armstrong. And whether they're splinter groups or people who never were part of the church but at least were around it enough to learn about this, there aren't any other churches that do this. And yet if you search for a watch service or a service of vigilance based on the Hebrew language here for observance in the English, the word means vigil or watchfulness, you'll find that churches have watch services. And many Christian churches have these at New Year's. That's when they have them, to watch the New Year coming in. And they'll read or they'll quote Exodus 12, verses 40 to 42, and say that that's the basis of it. And, of course, this was at the New Year. God said this will be the beginning of months for you, Abib or Nisan. Nisan, the Babylonian word for the Hebrew Abib. And, of course, they're off on that, but it's interesting that at least they're reaching out for the Bible in some way, and that they see something about these verses as having to do with an observance. It would be nice if everything were written out in the Bible so you could say, okay, this is clearly what the church is supposed to do. Now, Leviticus 23 is one of those places that it's about as crystal as can be put. There is a Sabbath, there is a Passover, there are days of unleavened bread, etc. There's a Sabbath, then there are festivals, including Passover, and there are holy days. It's obvious which days of the festivals are holy days. But there are other things and aspects of observing God that aren't as clear, and this is one of them, frankly. It says, you shall observe. And yet you read, as I said, Leviticus 23, about the holy days. It does not mention this night. You read the history of Israel down through the Old Testament. There's no reference to it. You read the New Testament Church of God's practice, Christ's practice, for 3.5 years. And there's no mention of this night. And yet there are strong statements in here that imply a profound meaning for Israel at the time. Because it's not possible to take everything in the Bible as a clear list, we do have to be perceptive about how the Bible is put together. We have to be perceptive about how this chapter is put together. If you are aware of it, there are doctrinal arguments about the background of this. Some argue that these verses are talking about the Passover. If you read these verses in conjunction with verse 43 and verse 44, it's obviously talking about the Passover because that's what the subject continues in. Or some will say, you look at the verses before and they're talking about Passover. So obviously this is talking about the Passover. It's not a special night to be observed. And there are papers and arguments and sermons and so on about this subject. Well, let's try to perceive how the chapter is put together so that we can discern it as we should. The chapter begins with God giving instructions to Moses. That's the first 20 verses, verse 1 through verse 20. Now verse 1 says, now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt. And then it continues down through, and you'll see the end of verse 20, in all your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread, close quote. This is the end of the direct quote from God. The way it worked was God told Moses and Aaron, this is what I want Israel to do. Now, obviously, all of Israel did not hear God's voice. It was left for Moses and Aaron to communicate that to the rest of Israel. And even then, all of Israel did not hear Moses and Aaron's voices. Verse 21, Moses called for all the elders of Israel and then said to them. And then Moses repeated to the leaders of Israel what it was that God had instructed them about how to keep the Passover. That's what verses 1 through 20 are about. This is how Israel will observe the first Passover. And we know it wasn't just the only Passover. It was a tradition, or not just a tradition, I'm sorry, back up, a festival that God instituted that is still standing. So the first 20 verses are what God laying down the overall instruction. Then verse 21, Moses calls for the elders. And then verses 21 through verse 27, Moses repeats the instruction to the elders. Then verse 28, the children of Israel went away and did so, just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, and you could say, and just as Moses went on and passed it along to the elders, they did. Now, it doesn't say how they did it, but the elders somehow got together the tribes on a smaller basis and passed the word and passed the word and passed the word so that everybody got the clear instructions. This is how we're going to keep the Passover. It's very important. As you must be familiar, as you've read through here, and as I know you know, for example, they would die if they did not keep the Passover a proper way. The death angel would strike them with the plague that God was bringing on all of Egypt. So there are very explicit instructions on how to eat it, how to prepare it, how people were to gather, when they were able to go out of their houses. And it was very, very important, and it had to be passed along then very carefully. Now, verses 29 through 39 are a historical record, then, of Israel doing what God said they should do, and God doing what he said he was going to do, that is, sending the plague on Egypt, and protecting Israel. So, first 20 verses, God laying it out. Next number of verses, Moses laying it out to the elders, and then the historical record of it actually being fulfilled. Then verse 40, now it starts out, the sojourn of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. This is a change of subject. This is no longer just a historical record of what they did that night. And some are going to argue, or I say some, it's out there in written arguments, that it's not a change of subject. It's still talking about the Passover. Well, listen to what Expositor's Bible Commentary says. Verses 40 to 42. Appropriately, now that the Exodus had begun, the narrator, meaning the one who's telling the story here in Exodus chapter 12, took a moment to reflect on the total Egyptian experience. Twice he commented that it had been 430 years to the very day, and then he gives the Hebrew here, and the same expression in verses 51 and verse 17. So the authors of Expositor's Bible Commentary perceive that this is a change of pace or a reflective comment. In other words, it's not a continuing of the historical statement about here's what happened on the Passover. So others perceive it the way the Church of God has perceived it. Others just don't approach it the way the Church of God has approached it, in the sense of having a celebration on this evening. Now, the Bible does not say how to keep it, or even what Israel did when they kept it. It just says it's a night of solemn vigilance or solemn watchfulness for the Lord bringing them out of the land of Egypt. The commentaries go on to explain that undoubtedly the Egyptians were very angry. You read through the history of what happened after they kept the Passover and they were able to go out of their homes on the morning of Passover day, having kept the Passover through Passover night. Then they spoiled the Egyptians while the Egyptians were dealing with all of the death in their homes. So the Egyptians would be very angry and resentful toward the Israelites. And then when it comes time and God says, okay, now go. Well, this is a time for solemn vigilance and watchfulness, not the least of which is watching out for the Egyptians who would be after you, but also of watchfulness in the sense of appreciation to God for what he had done in delivering them from the Egyptians. Notice verse 17. I did not read this to you from the instruction, but I referred to it. You shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this same day I have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. It wasn't the Passover. The Passover is before the Days of Unleavened Bread. The Days of Unleavened Bread begin when the Passover day ends. So here it says, on this same day of unleavened bread, I have brought out your armies, that's ranks, it just means disciplined, structured marching, out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. Now, observing this day is a reference to Passover, but it's also the night to be observed is bundled in here. It's not a clear instruction. If it were a clear instruction, then we would teach it that way and would have taught it that way in the church over the years. What we have done is built a tradition on getting together on the eve of the first holy day after the sun sets, because it was at dark, at night, when Israel left Egypt, and commemorating this night as a night of observance. Verses 50 and 51. Let me back up for a second here. After verse 42, now after the interjection here in the night of solemn observance, then verses 43 to 49 is another quotation of the Lord speaking to Moses. It doesn't say when God spoke this to Moses. Is this part of what God said to Moses that's recorded earlier in the first 20 verses, and the person inspired to write Exodus 12 just didn't write it down all at the same time and interjected these thoughts? You see, writing like this even today, we call them inset boxes or adjacent articles or something in an article, a related article, a thought that's interjected into the story flow. And that's what you have. And then you go back to the Lord speaking to Moses and Aaron in verses 43 through verse 49. And I can see why a writer would put it here, because this is not specific instruction about how to keep the first Passover. This is continuing instruction for how they were to observe the Passover for generation after generation. The earlier instruction was, this is how you're going to keep the first night. So I can see why a writer would do it this way. Then verses 50 and 51 go back to the historical statement. Okay, here's the record. Here's what happened. You have some reporting. You have some recording of what God said and what the other leader or what the leaders of the Israelites said. Verse 50, thus all the children of Israel did as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. And it came to pass on that very same day that the Lord brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt according to their armies. One of the strongest proofs that this is not a reference to the Passover is the fact that they did have to stay in their houses all night of the Passover. And yet it's very clear that they went out by night when they actually left Egypt. So it could not have been the night of the Passover. Numbers 33 adds to this. Numbers 33, the first few verses. These are the journeys of the children of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. By their armies, again, meaning highly organized, under the hand of, meaning under the leadership of. Now Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Lord, and these are their journeys according to the starting points. First, they departed Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. Passover is the 14th day. The 15th day would begin at sunset at the end of the Passover, the night after the Passover. And then it continues, on the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of the Egyptians. They went out at night. It couldn't have been the Passover. They went out on the 15th. Therefore, it couldn't have been the 14th. And so we deduce, I think accurately so, and have for decades, that the night to be observed is the eve of the first holy day. For the sake of perspective, go with me to Luke 23 and look and see what happened in the first century when Christ was crucified, Christ being the actual Passover that was pointed to by what God gave the Israelites. What happened after that Passover when the evening was coming? Luke 23 and verse 46. Jesus cried with a loud voice and said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And having said that, he breathed his last. And this was in the afternoon of Passover day. So when the centurion saw what had happened, he glorified God and he said, certainly this was a righteous man. Verse 53, I'm skipping over how Joseph of Arimathea is introduced as a member of the Sanhedrin or Sanhedrin. And he went to Pilate to ask for Christ's body. Verse 53, Joseph of Arimathea then took Christ's body, wrapped it in linen, laid it in a tomb. And as you know the story, it was a tomb owned by the Arimathea, or Joseph's family, Joseph of Arimathea's family. Laid it in a tomb that was hewn out of the rock where no one had been laid before. The day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew on. So it was almost sunset, Passover day, and Christ was buried just at the beginning, or just before the beginning of what we call the night to be observed, or the beginning of the first holy day of unleavened bread. And then 1 Corinthians chapter 5 is the last scripture that I want to read in explaining this. And this, you know, in association with the Passover, but it encompasses this night as well, I believe. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leavens the whole lump? You know, the story of the Corinthian problem that was going on. Therefore, purge out the old leaven, which you do before the end of Passover day. Now, I know your home and my home, we always have the leaven out before Passover day. But according to the Bible, you know, if you read that carefully, you do not have to have the leaven out of your homes until the end of the 14th. You can live in a leavened home still on Passover day. Now, where we keep the Passover room itself is unleavened. We unleaven it. But you don't have to have the leaven out of your house until the end, or by the end of the Passover day, before the beginning of the 15th. So you put out the old leaven that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. And here you get into the spiritual application of those physical lessons. For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. What feast? The Passover? Well, yes, but the Passover is not the feast where you put out leaven. It's also speaking of the days of unleavened bread. And talking about Christ, our Passover, being sacrificed for us and keeping the days of unleavened bread, it's also encompassing the time when Christ was buried, and that is the time at which the night to be observed fell for those who would be keeping the traditions that were started back in Exodus chapter 12. Under the auspices and the leadership of Herbert Armstrong and the Radio Church of God, and then when it became Worldwide Church of God in the late 60s, I don't remember the date exactly, late 60s or early 70s, the Church of God kept this night, according to varying traditions, kept the night, but in different ways, 8 or 69, 68, and it was an ambassador, no, 68, it was in New York City. And then in 1969, I kept it on the campus of Ambassador College. Now, in New York City, as I say, there were 2,000 people. We had this huge buffet line, you know, a mob of people, all these tables, sound, uproarious sound, you know, it was quite a deal. And then in 1969, I was at Pasadena, and I had a little wine in a plastic cup and a paper plate, and I can remember a cheesecake with a cherry on it and all. And we were on the tennis courts, which eventually were bulldozed down, and what became the parking garage that's there now was built. And then over the years since then, I've kept the night to be observed many times in private homes. I've kept it in restaurants and private rooms. I remember keeping it in a room or a restaurant that had been a home something like 200 years before then that it was built. And we had what had been a dining room in the place, and Gerald Waterhouse was there as part of a group of about 9 or 10 people. It was very intimate and nice. I kept it one time on the Lake Lachine, which is just off the St. Lawrence Seaway in Montreal. We had about 300 people there from the church, and we had this private room, a reception room, and the walls were all glass, all window, and you could see the lake and so on. It was very, very beautiful setting. And I had, you know, many wonderful memories of keeping the night. When we first started, it was a preaching service. I think everything in the Church of God was a preaching service. Everywhere Herbert Armstrong was a preaching service. This morning, I pulled up the night to be observed service that Herbert Armstrong conducted in 1955. Pulled it up on my computer and went through it and listened to parts of it. It's amazing what you can find and listen to these days.